Welcome to Season 2, Episode 4 of FBC Seminoles, The Table Podcast. This season is titled Seeds of Eden, and we'll dive into practical Christian living and how anyone can make a difference in the lives of those around them. On today's episode, you will hear from Tanner Moore, Todd Warren, Sean Decker, and Garrison Jones. Thank you for joining us at The Table.
All right, guys. Welcome back, man, to Seeds of Eden. Season 2 here of our podcast. We got a couple of the same faces and one new face. So we got Garrison joining us now, and everybody knows you at this point, so we won't make you introduce yourself.
Appreciate that.
So look at that. Sean wore his Texas Tech today also.
Today's the day, man.
Man, I said I didn't get the memo.
Well, we were talking about that in the office today because we had a we went and did the food distribution today with the Presbyterian Church. And me, myself, and Garrison and Joe all had Tech stuff on. And Margie was like, oh, I didn't get the memo. And I think I said, well, it's just kind of clean shirt day, really. You know, talking about laundry in
just
the sermon.
Find something clean.
Just, it was,
haven't worn it.
Happened
in a while.
To be a Tech shirt, right?
Well, good for you guys. Y'all look good and coordinated. I'm in black.
That counts.
Yeah. All right.
You can dream.
I prefer my logo over the Tech one, but
that's nice too.
Yeah. Well, hey, let's just kind of recap where we've been on our series. Sean, why don't you give us just like as fast as you can, 30,000 feet flyover of our first three episodes here in Seeds of Eden, and then I'll have maybe a couple of specific questions.
So Seeds of Eden is what we're calling this series, right? And this idea of that really the opposite of Eden in biblical terms is Babylon, and that's really the anti-Eden place, but also the ideal. We talked about that a few times ago. And how can we create Eden, you know, where we are, that place that is close with God and the place that is, it's perfect or it's good and it's, you know, it is nearer.
Everything is as it should be.
Yeah, everything is as it should be. But also, how do we do that when we're in Babylon? And you took us, we went to Jeremiah 29.
That's right.
Which has the scripture that's on a lot of pillows, right?
And made Hobby Lobby $1 million.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, that we quote that God knows the plans he has for us, but if we back up, he also said, but you're going to be Israel. You're going to be in 70 years of slavery.
Right.
But I love this. But while you're here, while you're in Babylon, pray for the welfare of Babylon.
Right.
Bloom where you're planted, for lack of a better word, right?
That's right.
Build gardens, have families, marry, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And so we talked about really this idea of how can we be a gardener in the Eden that we've been entrusted with in the middle of Babylon.
Yeah.
Right.
How can you cultivate the Babylon you live in
to
grow and bloom like the Garden of Eden?
Yeah. And we talked about the tension between kind of both worlds.
Right.
Like having one hand in Babylon that where we're supposed to be, and the other hand in Eden, or the other hand really in heaven is what we're thinking about. And bridging the gap, and even bridging the gap for other people.
Right.
And
how much of life, our Christian life, is standing in some kind of a gap, a gap between heaven and earth, a gap between Eden and Babylon, a gap between peace and chaos. So much of living life as a Christian is standing in that gap and living in tension. And that's what I wanted to open us up with right here is, what do you remember, or what are your thoughts about that tension that we've talked about? And did you have a chance to think any more about it, or do you remember anything that maybe stood out to you? You know, Garrison, I know new. Maybe you had some thoughts about just that tension that we feel, the pull between, you know, between sin and righteousness.
Yeah.
And also, though, between the Babylon, which is a good place to be, and Eden, which is a good place to be, and trying to pull those two together.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite things from the first few episodes was talking about insulating, not isolating.
Good.
That was a great analogy of we insulate ourselves, we protect ourselves, but we don't isolate ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing our DNA class right now is one at a time, and one of the episodes is called Proximity. And so we all have our place we like to go to be comfortable, to get away, and those places aren't bad.
Yeah.
But if we stay there forever, we never get in the messiness. And tension's messy, but it's also right where we're supposed to be.
So that's good. That's good. Any other thoughts from you guys?
One picture that sticks with me from the first kind of little session we had was this river of life flowing out of Eden into the whole world, and how, you know, as we bring heaven to earth, you know, we are, we've got life. It's the juxtaposition that we talked about of being like, we're already saved and we're living in a broken world.
Right.
And, and just our responsibility, to bring that life, from Eden into Babylon.
Yep.
Just that picture stuck with me.
Cool. I like that. I like that.
I liked when we talked about this at our Connect group last night, actually. You had talked about that if you're in a position where you feel that tension between the two, a lot of times we fight that, or we think something's wrong.
Right.
And I think we pointed out and came to the conclusion that's okay.
Yeah.
Like, the tension is not bad.
Right.
That God wants us to wrestle with those things, wrestle with Him even.
Yeah.
And we had a pretty good kind of talk branching out of that, because I think we maybe we have this idea in our head that things, if we're in Eden, things should be good all the time. But then if there is that tension, we know that things are going to be hard sometimes. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a young man that you were plugging into that had a pretty rough life. And, and you know, the fact that you were sowing seeds of Eden into his life without a sermon and without ever, you know, it wasn't that wasn't what it was about. But the fact that if we're wrestling with those things, that's not a bad thing.
Right.
Yeah. That we should do that.
Yeah. And I'm reminded of that. And honestly, I'd forgotten that we had talked about that, but that oftentimes it feels like we run away from tension, or that we feel like tension, if there's tension, it means that somebody's doing something wrong, or I'm doing something wrong, or I'm not in the right spot. We expect things, especially because we follow Jesus, and Jesus is a preacher of peace. He's the Prince of Peace. And so I think that oftentimes maybe we convince ourselves that if we're a disciple of the Prince of Peace, but I'm experiencing tension, then something's wrong. But I'm actually going to try to challenge us on that today. And let's get into that a little bit about the Prince of Peace and about peacemaking, and how being a peacemaker might mean that you have to go searching for tension. So let's get into that a little bit. How about Matthew chapter 5, Beatitudes. Matthew chapter 5, Beatitudes. Jesus' famous sermon, right? Sermon on the Mount, introduction to the famous Sermon on the Mount. And one of these Beatitudes, right here, Matthew chapter 5, verse 9. It's really, you know, they're short, but Garrison, read that one for us.
Sure, just verse 9?
Yep.
Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God.
Blessed are the peacemakers. When you first hear the word peacemaker, just instantly what comes to mind?
Resolving conflict.
Resolving conflict.
Providing a calmness.
Yeah.
You don't make any waves.
Yeah.
No conflicts.
Okay.
Like you're not part of that.
So do you have any people that come to mind when you think of peacemaker? And why is it Sean? I'll let y'all talk for a little bit. And then I'll say why my person, when I think of peacemaker, is Sean, but.
I think of Sean. Sean's a super relational people person, wants to help people.
Right.
And so it's if there's conflict, I'm not helping somebody almost in a sense. So see that.
Okay. Yeah. And just in my friendship with Sean over the years, he's never contentious.
Yeah.
I've never seen him instigate a conflict or... You know, Sean don't start no beef. You know what I'm saying? Like, never seen that out of him before. When I think of just my instant reaction when I think of being a peacemaker is somebody who doesn't, like you said, doesn't stir the pot, doesn't, you know, ruffle the feathers just for the sake of being a feather ruffler. And I'm sure you have someone in your head that maybe is a feather ruffler just for the sake of ruffling feathers, right?
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on that? Just what does a peacemaker mean to you?
I think of somebody who has wisdom, somebody who, when they confront problems or issues, they have a calmness, but a wisdom in the words that they that they bring to the situation.
Keep going with that. I'm interested. What does that look like? What does it mean to have wise words whenever you're speaking into a situation?
Well, I think a lot of it, or some of it at least, comes from identifying, like, having an end goal almost, you know, not being a slave to the moment, maybe, or to the emotions of the moment, but to have convictions about how things should be.
Not overreacting.
Yeah.
Keeping a calm, level-headedness.
Like having a broader perspective than what's happening right in front of you.
Right.
To be able to see past this conflict. And like you, I like what you said, to be able to see things as they should be and see things as they are, be able to keep that perspective. That's good. I like that. What else, John? It looked like you maybe had something to add there, and I cut you off.
No, I think that's – when I think about – so I'm not a super big conflict person. I don't run to it. There's been times in my life when I think I ran away from it. And even growing up, I think there were seasons of sweeping things under the rug and hoping they don't, you know, affect you or whatever. And I don't think that's being a peacemaker. And I think maybe I've learned that along the way, that it doesn't mean people walk all over you.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that you shy away from everything that's hard.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of growing up too. So it's not avoiding conflict.
Yeah.
But I think maybe it's how you handle it. And are you seeking to resolve?
Yeah.
Or are you seeking to, I don't know,
escalate?
Yeah.
So that was going to be where I wanted us to head in this conversation. So let's do that for a little bit. My next question was going to be, is there a difference between avoiding conflict and making peace? For me, I think that oftentimes, like when I think of a peacemaker, oftentimes I think of somebody, and I'm not trying to, just because I just talked about how I think about Sean, and I think Sean really is a peacemaker. But a lot of times what comes to my head is somebody who doesn't participate in conflict is a peacemaker. But let's dig into that a little bit. Is there a difference between avoiding conflict and making peace? And if so, what's the difference?
Well, if you make peace, there has to be the opposite of peace, right?
So beforehand.
Yeah. So if you're avoiding conflict, you never really have reason for peace because you always have, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
But if you're a peacemaker, then you go into a conflict and help resolve, help balance, help.
Yeah.
So to me, that's kind of how I see the difference.
Okay. What else? What do you think? What's the difference between, or how do you hear the difference between avoiding conflict, maybe, and making peace?
Well, making, just the word making, is like it's creating something. Avoiding is like the absence of it, you know? And I think there are convictions that come with making, like intentionally making peace. Something that's meaningful or important to you would cause you to do that.
Which one do you think Jesus is calling his followers to here? When he says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God," do you think he's talking about avoiding conflict? Or do you think he's talking about making peace, like creating peace? in places where it previously did not exist, like you just said. What do you think?
I think the obvious answer is the second one, but I think we would like to think it's the first one sometimes.
Yes. How come?
Because it's easier.
Yeah.
It's easy to say, I'm a peacemaker, so I'm not going to get involved in that.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Whereas really we're being called to come into the situation and help. You know, it's just easier.
Being a pacifist, and I use that term not politically, but relationally, being a relational pacifist is not being a peacemaker.
Right.
It's being a withdrawer.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. Sounds good to me.
That's a word.
It's being one who withdraws.
Yeah.
Yes. About. Yeah. Okay. What else? Let's keep going with that. Which one is Jesus calling us to? And maybe why is like you said, avoiding conflict is easier.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Conflict is messy.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
It's unknown.
Right.
Well, there's some pain that goes with that.
Mm-hmm. Right? You could say tension.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and we have this picture of Jesus, this meek lamb, here's Jesus as that person.
Right.
And so that speaks to avoiding conflict at all costs. Like, no, he was just gentle. Mm-hmm. You know, we have that idea of Jesus, but that's not at all who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he was right in the middle of the tension, mm-hmm. and not to create conflict, but he was creating peace ultimately. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think y'all alluded to it, that there is that end goal in mind when you're going in. You're seeing what's ahead and what we're trying to get to. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's going to be messy in the process to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people try to put Jesus in that box that, you know, the peacemaker in him was avoidant and not, you know, mm-hmm. just didn't get involved. Well, that's not right.
Yeah, it's not true. I mean, he got himself crucified.
Yeah, yeah.
For being in the middle of tension.
Right.
And
challenged him.
And challenging people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So... Boy, there's so many questions. Okay, how about this one? So like historically speaking, what's going on in Jesus' world, in his immediate world, that's causing an absence of peace?
Romans are persecuting Jewish people, so Romans are in charge and treating them badly. That's one thing.
Roman occupation of Judea, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then within the Jewish world itself,
mm-hmm.
you've got several different divisive groups, mm-hmm. or Jewish sects,
mm-hmm.
who all have their slightly different version of interpreting the scriptures,
right.
And who are, you know, quite opposed to one another, mm-hmm. right? And everybody wants to figure out whose team you're on. And if you kind of read the Gospels through those lenses, what you see is many of the questions Jesus is asked, I think, could be rephrased to say, Jesus, whose team are you on?
Mm-hmm.
Are you a Sadducee? Or Jesus, are you a Pharisee? Jesus, are you a zealot?
Right.
You know, they're trying to label him and get him to kind of commit to one style. Anyway, I'm kind of ad-libbing now. But let's go back to this Roman occupation of Judea. Is this a spiritual conflict? Is this a political conflict? Is this a... what type of a conflict is this?
Yes. I think... First off, we think political because it was a hierarchy of politics, and mm-hmm. Romans were in charge. But I think you can make a case it's spiritual too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. How so?
I don't know.
I mean, you could go into it like this idea, it's just another Babylon. It's another ruler of the Jewish people that they, you know, got themselves into basically. Like over and over and over, they were ruled by other people.
Mm, right.
And so there is this pull to be Roman, mm-hmm. in the way that they live and act and worship. And mm-hmm. and yeah,
mm.
so they're pulled probably in two ways.
Sure. And I mean, Caesar is claiming what about himself?
Deity.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's, mm-hmm. He says he's God on earth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so to submit to Roman authority is essentially mm-hmm. to go in walk in step mm-hmm. with Caesar's claim about himself. So mm-hmm. in a sense, you're almost bowing down to Caesar, right? If you just kind of become Roman or, you know, assimilate to the Roman rule, is this conflict physical in any way between the Jews and the Romans? How historical are you guys?
I mean, I feel like we
we've all heard that the Romans beat the Jews, and yeah. Romans, I mean, literally persecuted them, you know, for not bowing, for not submitting, for not doing things the way that they want things to be done. Almost a fear tactic type thing.
Yeah, so there's this famous story of when Pontius Pilate first becomes governor of Judea, he tries to set up Roman standards in the temple, and the Jews beg him not to. Anyway, it's a long story, but he essentially shuts a ton of Jews into the temple, and he just starts having his soldiers, who are hidden in the crowd, throw their disguises off and start slaughtering Jews in the temple courts. And finally, a group of Jews come and they bow at Pilate's feet, and he thinks that they're, you know, maybe going to bow down to him, and they say, look, dude, if you want to do this, then just go ahead and chop our heads off too. But we're not stopping. You're not going to bring that Roman standard into this temple. And Pilate is so moved by their courage that he actually backs off. But that's so, okay. So Jesus tells these people, blessed are the peacemakers. And that's the world he lives in. Political conflict, physical conflict, spiritual conflict. And when I think of the absence of peace, if I'm a Jew living in Jesus's world, instantly I'm thinking about the Romans who are here with us. And Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers. What do you think Jesus's call to his followers are, given that context? What's he calling them to?
I think there's a couple of things. I think you could say that he was saying, just submit and quit trying to fight back. You could say that. I don't think that's what he's calling them to.
That would be avoiding conflict. That'd be avoiding conflict. Well, it would be one way of avoiding conflict.
But I think that's how many would interpret it.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
But I think too, you know, you have the instance where, for example, when Jesus is being taken and Peter cuts off the guy's ear.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And Jesus says, no, that's not what I'm talking about.
Right.
Right. So I think you can go a myriad of ways there.
You can. You can. But are all the ways you could go the right way?
No, of course not.
Yeah. No. So let's talk about it in terms of what we've already talked about in this study.
Mm-hmm.
We've said, well, living, if you want to be an Eden planter who lives in Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
When you live in Babylon, there are two obvious and somewhat easy choices. Become Babylonian, which is in a way avoiding conflict.
Mm-hmm.
That would be what you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just submit to the Romans. Don't fight back. Just do what they say.
Right.
Right. Be gentle. The other side of that is isolate. Withdraw to the desert so that you don't have to deal with the Romans.
Mm-hmm.
And find a place where there is no conflict so that you can be at peace,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But is either one of those instances actually making peace?
No.
Hmm.
Not in the sense of what Jesus Christ meant by peace.
Yeah, I would agree with you. So that kind of leads us to the next question is, can you be a follower of Jesus and not seek places of conflict and tension in the world? Can you be a peacemaker and avoid all conflict? I guess is the question.
No, and I don't think you're, like Todd said, I don't think you're making anything.
Mm-hmm.
If peacemaking requires action,
mm-hmm.
and I think avoiding, that's, you're not making a choice there. You're choosing to not act.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think you're enabling also.
Huh. Okay, what does that mean?
Well, like as believers, as followers of Jesus, if we have this life that we've been given, and we know the depths of joy, and we know, and we know what has been given to us, then avoiding conflict, isolating from conflict, is – well, it's not loving. Like, I mean, it's not loving to those who don't have that same thing. And like I say, enabling, if we know a better way and we just allow whoever it is to live
Babylon
to live like Babylon.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, that's enabling.
We might as well be Babylonian.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a great point. So, we were talking about sports before we got on the air here. And I know we talked about sports in other episodes, but I am interested. I think about this a lot of times in terms of offense and defense. And about when you're, as a Christian, are you playing offense or are you playing defense? I think that, before I say what I think, what do you think? What's the most common strategy for Christians today to play offense or to play defense?
Well, we talked about this in our Sunday school class, like early in the fall.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just mentioned how when I look back at the prayers that I've prayed for, let's say my daughter or my son, it's always been, please keep them from,
protect
them from evil and from, and it's never, please allow them to go out and give your life to those around and run into the darkness and be light in the darkness.
That's a scary prayer. Praying for your kids, isn't it?
Scary prayer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, you're right on the money, and so that would seem to mean that's a defensive prayer. Yeah, I don't know what you guys think. Do we normally in church today play offense or defense?
Nah, defense. I agree with Todd. Just what Todd said. We're the tension's scary, and so we defend.
Yeah.
Rather than dive in face first into it.
Yeah.
Because it's unknown, and unknown is hard.
Keep Babylon out, so that we can keep Eden to ourselves.
Right.
So, Jesus tells this parable in several of the Gospels about talents and burying talents, right? I think that this is what he's talking about in that parable. A lot of times when we read the parable, we think about, what Jesus means by talents is the talent that God has given me. But he's talking about money. Talent is a form of money in his world, right? So that's a bad translation for us. It's an unfortunate coincidence that the word is talent. I think what Jesus is getting at in that parable is he's talking to Israelites who have been entrusted with the mission of God and the knowledge and the instruction and the wisdom of God in the form of the scriptures and in the calling that God has placed on their lives. And God has called them to be the Eden people on earth. Mm-hmm. And they're burying their gift in the sand and they're on defense. Shut the Romans out. Shut the bad guys out. Keep all of the good blessing of God to ourselves. And when God gets back, he says, you wicked, lazy servant. Mm-hmm. At least go put it on, with the banks and get interest on it. Mm-hmm. And the point is not, use your talents for God. I think that's a natural kind of like developing of that parable. But I think in the immediate moment right there, he's getting on to the Israelites and saying, you're the Eden people on this earth. And you've been playing defense the whole time. And your call is to garden, not to store up the fruit in storehouses so you can make sure you eat.
Yeah.
You've been called to cultivate the Babylon that you're living in, but all you're doing is harvesting the fruit and hoarding it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that relevant at all to our world today? And maybe what could we take from that as Christians today? What does that look like for us now?
I think they try and justify our behavior a lot of times. It's the same type of deal. God, I didn't do that like you wanted me to, but at least I didn't fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. I think it's the same type of concept for us, mm-hmm. application-wise. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I'm not perfect, God, and I know that I'm not playing offense great, but at least I didn't fall off the cliff and do that thing that guy did or whatever. You know? I think it's kind of a similar concept.
Yeah, what else? Let's go with that for a little bit.
I keep thinking about this, the garden visual, and if all we do, I'm not a gardener. We've tried, like we can grow flowers and stuff.
Sure.
And we grew cucumbers one time, and we had them coming out our ears. It was crazy, not literally, but there was a whole bunch. But we're not typically we're not very good gardeners, right? We can do other things, but I know if all you're doing is harvesting, and you never pull a weed. Or you never hoe, you never clean up around your garden. At some point, the harvest is going to go away.
Right. You got to defend the garden a little bit.
Yeah. And so I think there's, whether we call harvesting offense or defense, whether we call weeding the garden offense or defense.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Like you've got to, there's got to be both.
Yeah.
Or the harvest at some point will be choked out and it's going to be void.
You have to insulate yourself from Babylon, right? Yeah. Like what we were talking about.
Yeah. Right? And so I think there's, if we're thinking about gardening, you can't do just one thing.
Oh, good.
You know?
And call sports that good. Is the same. You can't have a team that only plays offense. Yeah. You're going to lose. And you can't have a team that only plays defense.
That's good.
You're going to lose that game too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? So if we're thinking about making peace, we're thinking about, you know, gardening in Babylon, and we're thinking about playing offense some, not just only playing defense, but hey, go shoot the ball a little bit. Right?
Yeah.
Where are there places in our world where there is no peace? Where in our world is there an absence of peace? And here's the next question. And are we being faithful to our call, to the call of Jesus on our lives, if we're not seeking those places out?
Wow.
And is it almost a shame on me if I can't answer that question? Where in my world is there no peace? And I'm asking myself that. Is it a shame on me that I don't know? Because I've been avoiding those places. Because I've been on defense. And I've been trying so hard to keep that yuckiness in my community out that I don't even, I'm blind. I've become blind to the pain and the hurt in my world. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think about that?
Something that struck me, you know, this DNA class we're doing, there was a line in the video that just hit me like a ton of bricks, and something along the lines of the very people that Jesus ran after and pursued the most to save are the exact same people we do our best to avoid. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. If you think about it, who he called to be disciples, he sprinted to those who needed help. He sprinted to those who had been on an island with leprosy and all kinds of things. And that's the very people that we do our best to, no, don't be associated with that, or don't want to run into that. What happens if fill in the blank? And so it was the complete opposite. Many times, I don't want to lump you guys in, I live the complete opposite of how Jesus Christ lived in the sense of judgmental or whatever it is.
Yeah, don't let me into that. I'm not that
way. you can speak for yourself there, you know. But I think it's just the complete opposite of what Jesus Christ, how he did things and how he calls us to be too. But
when I think about our church, and I'll brag on our church a minute.
Yeah,
because we need to. I think about the banners on the wall, and you know, our mission, our values, our measures, and one of the things it says is community instead of cliques. And I know that for a season, for a good while, that's kind of how it felt like things were. When new people would come in, it was really hard to break into what was happening here. And we acknowledged that as a church years ago when we were going through a lot of this divisioning process. And we had to repent of some of those things and how we were. And so that community, not cliques, was really an aspirational kind of goal. They're looking forward. Like, this is who we want to be. And I think we're doing a much better job about doing that. When I look around at how people are finding their place and they're finding their people. They're finding small groups and a place to belong. My wife shared a text that she had received from someone else who received from someone else who at their Connect group last night, they went home and they texted their whole group and said something to the effect of, you know, last night was exactly what my family needed. Like I needed to be taken care of last night. And I felt like I really was. And they said that was exactly what my soul needed. And I'm like, man, like that's gardening.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think people, are finding their place and they're feeling welcome and they're finding community. Can we do better? Of course.
Sure.
We can always,
sure, we can always
do better.
There's plenty of Babylon to be guarded.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that's still, we have a ways to go, but I see us making a dent in some of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and, as we think about this, I think, you know, if you're listening in and for us at the table, I think the question for us to consider is, have I been living my Christian life, trying to avoid bad things and avoid wrong and avoid darkness? And that's not bad.
Right.
It's not bad to want to keep yourself from sin, right? It's not bad to want to avoid, allowing brokenness to creep into your life, right? So we're not saying just, hey, anything goes. Go do whatever you want. No. But on the other hand of that, I think that the church today has scared itself into avoiding the advancement of hell in our world. And I think sometimes we're so afraid of hell that we forget that Jesus said, the gates of hell will not stand against you. That was a promise, right? And I know I've said it before, but gates are a defensive structure. When Jesus said that, hell was the team playing defense. And Jesus said, they can't stop you, so go score, right? Is basically what he's saying in that moment right there. I hope that if you're listening to this, and you guys here at the table, that you feel empowered and emboldened. That, hey, part of my call is not just to avoid sin, not just to avoid conflict, but Jesus is calling me to go seek out places in my world that don't have peace. Not just be sensitive to them. Not just Jesus is calling me to be aware that there's some places in my world that are broken. No. Jesus has called me to seek those places out. Not so I can participate, but so I can garden them. And you think about well, what contributes to a lack of peace? It doesn't just have to be people who don't believe. Like, we're not talking about go find your local atheist club. Okay, maybe them.
Could be.
Maybe it could be. But how about the family who lives across town that doesn't know what they're going to eat tonight? You think there's a lack of peace in that house? And do you think we have any of those people in our community?
Yeah.
Saw it today.
Well, that's all I want to say next was sometimes we think about go find lack of peace, we think, oh, I got to go to a third world country then.
Sure.
But it's here.
It is.
Next door neighbor.
It is. Yeah. Somebody's marriage is falling apart. I'm telling you, man, there's no peace there. You know, somebody's kid is struggling. There's not peace in that house. Somebody's house is falling apart. I don't know if you've ever lived in a house that's fallen apart, but I think if I'm living in a house that's fallen apart, I'm probably not going to have a whole lot of peace in my life.
Yeah.
Right? And so can you go seek out the places in your community where there's no peace? And that's what being a peacemaker is about. And I think that's what Jesus is calling us to. And so as we get into kind of, you know, this kind of episode is we're really getting into these practical ideas of like, how do we live a Christian faith? How do we live out our Christian faith in the meantime? Well, we can't run away from Babylon.
Yeah.
we have to cultivate it, but we can't enable Babylon to mm-hmm. keep existing, like you pointed out either. Mm-hmm. How do we cultivate and bring peace, right, into the Babylon that we live in? Mm-hmm. And we garden, and the only way to do that is to seek the places that are dark, mm-hmm. to seek the places that are broken, to seek out the struggle. And we kind of come back full circle now. And, you know, we said we started this episode by talking about how oftentimes we feel like tension is bad. And if I'm feeling tension, then that means I must not be following the Prince of Peace. But I'm going to suggest the opposite, that you can't follow the Prince of Peace if you're not ever in tension. Because that's what it means to make peace, is that you seek the tension so that you can solve the tension, right? Mm. Any closing remarks here to finish this one up?
It sounds like it takes intentionality. We have to be intentional. It's not just going to happen.
Sure.
Because we can play that void game all. We have to intentionally look for ways that we can be peacemakers.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
And know that it's going to be messy at times.
It will be.
Like gardening is messy, and there are thorns, and you're going to get hurt sometimes. But yeah, but the ultimate goal or the end goal is worth it. Mm-hmm. It's worth getting dirty, getting messy.
And that's going to be the topic for our next episode, is that gardening is messy. So good segue. Right. And we'll wrap this one up there.
Cool.
Yeah, cool. Good job, guys. Thanks. Cool.
Thanks for listening to FBC Seminoles, The Table Podcast. A new episode will be released each Monday. We invite you to pull up a chair and join our table each week as we dig into God's Word together. We would love for you to join one of our Connect groups that meets throughout the week and worship with us on Sunday mornings at 9 or 10:30. If you'd like more information, you can call our church office at 432-758-3291 or visit our website at fbcseminole.org.